or divorce was adultery. And New York, I believe, was on record that they were the last state to give that up. And now adultery is, you can still get a divorce in many states, but most of them now is just irreconcilable differences.
Right. Yeah, the religious
American
world
used to understand that.
What's that?
The American people used to understand the moral fiber that.
But they were hearing it every Sunday. What are they hearing now?
Yeah.
See, well, there's a good point. But even the ones who are going, which used to be over half of the country, most of them were hearing it's not a problem. Brian?
Yeah, in the spirit of, you know, nothing new under the sun, it kind of reminds me, when you look in Jeremiah, and he was asking them for stand in the way and seek the old paths. And, of course, they said, we will not.
Right.
And they believed, you know, the false prophets are saying, peace, peace, would there be no peace? Same thing, right?
Right.
We're starting to see in our own country today, Isaiah 5:20, woe to those that call evil good and good evil. It's been flipped on its head.
Right.
Right? And so here we go, right? Just another civilization that's going to crash and burn, unfortunately, because of sin.
Well, it sure looks like it. We'll see what the Lord does. All right, I don't want to get into this too much, but I want to kind of develop a little bit. I know you guys' eyes glaze over when we talk about Greek, but there's a point at the bottom of the page that I would really like to make, because we're going to see this about six times in the next two verses. The Greek has, we have two. We have active and passive. If it's active, who's doing the action? Person's doing the action. If it's passive, then the action of the verb, who's doing it? Somebody to you, right? Well, the Greeks have a third one. And let me just read a part of this. Again, it's at the bottom of page one. The middle voice. Here we approach one of the most distinctive and peculiar phenomenon of the Greek language. It is impossible to describe it adequately or accurately in terms of English or English idiom. So look down now toward the middle of the paragraph at the end. The middle voice is a use of a verb which describes the subject as participating in the results of the action. Now, that's different. I might commit a sin and then I repent. But what if I continue to participate in the results of those actions? Now I can't have forgiveness. An action needs to stop. In the middle language, in the middle voice, it doesn't. The last sentence there, the essence of the middle therefore lies in its calling attention to the agent as in some way clearly concerned with the action. Now in America, we call this narcissism. Does anybody not know what narcissism? This is a name that kind of came up to express what the baby boomers and every generation since has thought, and that is the world revolves around who?
Yeah.
Revolves around me. And because of that, I can't see your needs. You don't have any needs. There's only one person in the world who has needs. Who's that? It's me. And if what I need hurts you, well, that's how it ought to be. The world is for me. So these teachers, and that's why, like I say, about five times in the next two verses, and this is very uncommon, the middle voice isn't used. I mean, how many times have I talked about the middle voice since I've been here? Almost 8 years now, or 9 years. Never. It's never been an issue. But it's fascinating here, the translators can't translate it. Matter of fact, he makes the point here, we can never hope to express exactly in the Greek middle voice by any English translation. So what we have here is we have an ability of a language to be able to do this. Now, I remember when I first studied Greek, one of the classic illustrations is when you take a bath, who are you washing? It's totally concerned with you. So we put that in the middle voice. If I'm washing the baby, then I put it in the active voice. If somebody's washing me, we we put it in the passive voice. But if it's all concerned, I'm dirty, I'm going to wash myself, well, that's the middle voice. So here, these people, their walk is completely surrounding themselves and their flesh. Now, the reason this is important is because when we get toward the end of the chapter, and this is in the exact middle of page 2, he quotes, or I quote, 2 Peter 2, verse 14, 18, and 19, their eyes are full of adultery, when do they cease from sin? They can't. Then, in verse 19, they promise liberty, but what are they? They're slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him he is also brought into bondage. Now, there's one more concept that we have to develop here, and that's found toward the upper portion. This is an adverb that never gets used. I read a commentary today. It said something like this. Peter understood the Greek language, and he used it to the utmost here. And so, like I said, it's a little bit difficult for us because this word literally means behind, backwards, or that second definition, one who is followed as a leader. So these people are in the wagon, and the according puts them in the wagon. Who's running the show? Fleshly lusts. They've lost control. See, Christians, that's hard for us to understand because of Christ and because of his relationship to us, we're pretty much always in control, right? I mean, we slip up, but what do? We snatch ourselves back, and I mean, it's fast. As soon as the lust is gone, what does a Christian do? He reasserts his authority, and he puts it to death, right? That's what Paul said. We have to put it to death. These people can't do that anymore. These people are, you know, let's look at one example of this. Let's take a drug addict or an alcoholic, or, you know, they even talk about sexual addiction now. And so these three things, drug addiction, alcoholism, and the reason I put the fornication or the pornography in there is because that's not a drug. I don't like it when people say it's an addiction, because what is it really? It's a sin. It's not an addiction. Addiction proclaims what? I don't have any control over this. This has taken over, and so I'm not responsible. So this person who has been completely overcome, matter of fact, I remember reading here lately, I've seen it on television, they show the ad for the casino, then what's their disclaimer at the end?
If you have a gambling problem, call us.
Yeah, if you have a gambling problem, what does that mean? Well, these people, it can be anything. It can be any sexual or any fleshly lust. Consider those men in Sodom who couldn't stop even when they were struck blind. And I've made that point a couple of times now. So the flesh is the oxen. The adverb here puts the person behind the action. Looks like we lost somebody here. Sorry, Billy. And the person is so focused on what he wants and what he's doing that he's not even aware of this. So this is a terrible. Do you reap what you sow? If you sow to the flesh, you reap corruption. That word's going to be used three times in the next verse. Actually, I think it's in this verse. Or maybe the next verse. Corruption. These people are totally corrupted. So that's what has to happen. You remember in, 1 Timothy chapter 4? These people who are teaching, commanding to abstain from meats and abstain from marriage, what is their conscience? What's happened to it? Seared with a what? Hot iron. That's these people. They don't have a conscience anymore. They can't feel bad about it. They're so focused on the encounter and the next encounter and the next encounter, there's never any repentance because they can't see a need. They can't even see God anymore. They can't see other people. The damage they're doing to somebody else. I heard the other day, I thought it was a little bit humorous, but it was so sad. The person that was on the television was going to tell us how to survive having your parents as narcissists. So how to survive if your parents had you grow up with absolutely no care or concern for you at all because they were so focused on themselves. You just had to take care of yourself. How do you overcome the hurt, the disappointment, the disillusionment? And that's a pretty interesting question. Okay, so and now we're at the second point, which is in the lust of uncleanness. Now, we've talked about this several times now. Is lust a bad thing? Depends on what you lust after, right? Paul lusted to go to heaven. Is that a bad thing? No, it was all-consuming for him. Jesus said, with desire, I have desire to take the commute or to take this Passover with you. That's the same word, lust. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but when it's directed toward the things that God has forbidden, now you don't even have to fulfill it. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 twice, once with anger, once with adultery, once you feel the lust or the anger, does it matter what happens next? No, you've already sinned. Now, you can compound it, obviously. But the sin and the need for repentance has already occurred. So, these people are being drug along by their flesh in unclean lusts. And that's what I was going to, the point I was going to make earlier. Let's turn to page 3 now. But you see these alcoholics wallowing in their own vomit, unable to even care that other people see it. That's the lust of uncleanness. That's what's being described here. It's just the word uncleanness is found in the middle of page 3, stain, defilement. Who, and here's an interesting, he makes that point. Who behind the flesh, remember, they're being drug along by the flesh, who behind the flesh are full of lusts for defilement. So this is the kind of sin that it's sickening. I mean, when sin reaches a certain point, it becomes disgusting, it becomes nauseating, even to people who are not necessarily servants of God or really care about such things. There's just a point where even the world, it's a sickening thing. All right, the next problem we have with these people, and this is a major problem in our culture today. Matter of fact, we're seeing it play out right now in all the cities in the country, all the big cities, except the ones that have cut it off. These people that we see rioting, these people we see breaking windows and burning down buildings, these people who are threatening to kill policemen and using, they mistake. Do people make mistakes? And it depends on your job. Jeannie and I were talking yesterday when Elvira had a surgery about 15 years ago. They left a clamp in there. And it killed one of her kidneys. Well, do doctors make mistakes? I mean, they do 10,000 surgeries all over the country. How many things like that happen? Now, you could sue for that. They didn't. Because mistakes happen. Everybody makes mistakes. Airline pilots make mistakes. What happens if an airline pilot makes a mistake? Yeah, and it's a terrible thing. But that's just the point. Virgil and I were working on a piece of wood the other day. I made mistake after mistake after mistake. But what did it cost me? Piece of wood. But if I make that same mistake on the freeway, I could kill someone or I could be killed. So the point that we're making here is that we're just despising authority. This is not, you know, if a policeman does something wrong, what should we do? Punish the policeman. Should we smear the whole group as being racist and ungodly and just out to kill people? If we do, all the police are going to resign. Matter of fact, that's what's happening in a lot of countries right now, or a lot of states right now. What's going to happen next when there's no police? We're going to have anarchy. And you're going to see a whole lot more people getting killed. If you look at Chicago right now, because of what they've done, they're having, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 murders a week. And that could go everywhere. Go ahead, George.
I think it's like 50.
Okay, and that may very well be.
It's been that for years.
That's true, but it has doubled. Most of these states, most of these statistics are doubling. And again, I'm not trying to say right or wrong. I'm just saying, are we reaching a point where people are despising authority? They don't like anybody telling them what to do. They don't like the police. The people in power right now, they're trying to throw out all the laws. They want to legalize all drug use. They want to legalize prostitution. They want to legalize because people ought to have the right, because we're all narcissists. So what should we do? Whatever we want. And so this is an issue. I think we can see maybe more clearly than anybody, but these false teachers, these preachers in these denominations, the Holy Spirit here is revealing to us that many of them despise authority. And we've all seen it. You open the Bible, you show them a verse, what do they say? I'm not going to do that. You can read all the verses on baptism, what do they say? You read them to the Baptists, you read them to the Presbyterians, you read them to the Catholics, what do they say? I'm not bound by that. George, did you have something?
I saw a commercial a week or so ago that... It has to do with a man whose name is David Horowitz, and he's got a Jewish something background, I think. But he has written a book that he's trying to get published and everything, where he's quoting, and I'm not sure who he's quoting, because I haven't looked into it that far, but that there are people in this country that their whole focus right now is to totally destroy Christianity.
Yeah. That's why they're tearing down the statues. That's why they're trying to get the Supreme Court packed so they can do away with the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. They it's a scary time. And they've already said, like you said, they've already said what they want to do. They just can't right now. Karen?
Yeah, I think today what you have a lot along with the despise of authority eradicated, and that's also flaring
the fires. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, although I'm afraid there's some people out there using racism to pour gasoline on fires. But you're right, there is racism out there. But you know something, when I go to Malawi, there's racism there. I can't tell them apart. There's the Chewa tribe and there's the Tumbuka tribe. They hate each other. They're disgusted with each other. And I can't tell them apart, but they can tell each other apart. So, it's not... This is a problem many nations face. Pretty soon, we don't call it that, but when they start hating Christians, is that a form of racism? We're an elect race, a royal priesthood. What are they doing? I mean, I already feel, I don't know if you feel it or not, I already feel that there's a prejudice against us. When we open our mouths and we start telling people the truth, what happens? Same thing. There's racism. So we have to put it behind us. And if we can't, then the nation will be destroyed. Charles?
Yeah, along the same lines there, it has something to do with the majority and the minority. Okay, in our case right here, see, we are the minority. The majority are the ones was saying that Christianity is something that we shouldn't embrace. That is what the minority people are saying. The majority is saying. The minority is the one who is saying that Christianity is what we're going to do, you know, as far as God's word. And you can translate that in a lot of ways because you look at different ethnic groups. Majority and minority.
Right.
And this is where you figure out, where do you fit in? And they use the same, it's the same technology right there when it comes to everybody's right. We're doing it this way. The majority is going that way.
Right.
Okay, the minorities, okay, well, we're that few people. We're those few people here.
And we'll be the ones that are hated.
Exactly.
When that class comes.
We come up with their, like we are. They don't like you because you're a member, or you're trying to tell them what to do.
That's right.
Not what the Bible is saying. And I tell you what to do, you tell them what the Bible is saying.
Right.
But like you said earlier, well, I don't believe that. You know, we can do anything we want to.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, in the Old Testament back there, was everybody was doing what's right in their own eyesight.
Right. Yeah. Same exact thing. Okay, let's move on here, or I'm only going to get 3 pages. I won't even have to work next week. So we don't want that. All right, let's turn to page 4. They are presumptuous. Now, you can't, this is the only place in the scriptures this word is used, and it wasn't really used much in the Greek language, so you don't get much information. So what I've done is I've gone back into the Old Testament, and in Deuteronomy chapter 1, you rebelled against the command of the Lord and presumptuously went up into the hill country. In other words, God said, you're not going in. They went up anyway. What happened to them? They were defeated terribly because they went up presumptuously. In other words, on my own authority. Same thing in Deuteronomy 18. When this prophet speaks and it doesn't come to pass, he's spoken presumptuously. In other words, he's taken it on himself and he doesn't care that I didn't send him. He's pretending I sent him. It's presumption. In Nehemiah, it says, they acted presumptuously and did not obey your commandments, but sinned against your rules. And then the latter part of that, they turned a stubborn shoulder and stiffened their necks and would not obey. So what does presumption mean? I'm going to do what I want to do, and I really don't care. You put a line in the sand, what am I going to do? I'm going to cross it. It's not a problem. All right, let's jump to page 5, self-willed. Now, I don't think we have to spend much time on this word, because what's the elder commanded not to be? Not self-willed. And so this, again, have we heard of the word hedonist or hedony? That's the Greek word for giving your life over to pleasure. And it's a psychological term. I don't know if it's made it into the general language yet. But people who are hedonists are narcissists. And you use these big terms. I want you to get familiar with it because it's starting to be used a lot in the culture. So we need to be able to follow. It means, I don't care. The world revolves around me. I want what I want. If you don't get what you want, too bad. Tough. Suck it up. Deal with it. I'm the one. I'm the only important one. That's why we have so much road rage today. If people cared about other people, would that happen? See, it wouldn't happen. All right. Now, at the bottom of page 5 or middle of page 5, they're not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. And so they're not afraid. That's the word tremble. When we talk about hell and what it's going to be like to be sent to hell, what happens in the hearts of a Christian? You feel fear? I do. I feel terror. When I think about hell, gnashing of teeth, and all of those things, I have so much faith, I can see it. And it's terrifying to think that the majority of the people in this world today are going there. And I think that's one of the power sources for evangelism. I mean, could it be any worse for them than hearing the truth? So these people are not afraid to speak evil, which is the Greek word blasphemy, of dignitaries. Now, the word dignitary is the word we're really... Brian, can you look at this? I don't know what's going on with it, but I don't think it's working right now. So all have sinned and fallen short of what?
Glory.
The glory of God. What does the glory of God mean? His splendor, his brightness, his magnificence. Is he the only one, though? This is the same word in the plural. Glories. The glorious ones. Now, we don't know exactly who these are. Because what do we know about angelic beings? I mean, we know there's a Gabriel. We know there's a Michael. Are there any others?
There's a host.
Probably, but we don't know who they are. But Michael is an archangel. What does that mean? Well, we don't know what it means. We don't have a point of reference. So would we dare to speak evil of people like that? But these people are. In Colossians chapter 3, Paul said, these people take delight in worshiping angels. There was something going on here. I think it probably had something to do with Gnosticism. Remember, Peter is written pretty late, and Gnosticism has already come into the church. And so this is a term that refers to these angelic beings. Somehow or another, these people were speaking evil of. We don't have any point of reference today with that kind of thing. But in verse 11, what about angels? Do they do that? I mean, they know these dignitaries and glories far more than we do. What does Jude say about it? When Michael the archangel was arguing or contending with Satan about the body of Moses. Ever thought about that? What must have happened there? Satan wanted Moses' body. Probably for the same reason that the Catholics have all these relics. How many Catholics believe that pieces of the cross are still here and pieces of the garment that he was wrapped in are still here? Moses' body was important to Satan for some reason. And it was important to God too, so he sent Michael the archangel. And they disputed. Now, I don't know exactly what that meant, but when the time came for Michael to say something derogatory about Satan, he would not do it. Even the highest angel would not say something evil against the greatest foe of mankind. And we have to be very careful about that. I remember a kid's song came out, I hate the devil and the devil hates me. Is that really something we ought to... I don't think we should. We don't bring those kind of railing accusations. We don't make statements like that. George?
Well, this speaking evil of dignitaries, to me, that does not necessarily mean... speaking evil of God or angels as such, but it includes that, but it means I shouldn't speak evil of President Biden, as it says in Romans 13, and anyone in power in the government. I shouldn't speak evil of the governor of our state, even though... he doesn't do God's will.
Yeah, and I'm going to deal with that in the next verse. There's another verse where it talks about that. Actually, the next, I think it's the next clause or a little bit further. Let me see here. But these natural, yeah, it's in somewhere. Yeah, it's in, it's coming up. There's another word which talks about lordship and did God give lordship to civil government? Yeah. Did civil government give lordship to police, to governors, to tax collectors, anybody they want? So what do we do with people like that? We don't speak evil. Because angels, in the bottom of page 6 now, angels who are greater in power and might. Looks like I lost the mic again. All right. Does it sound like it?
Is it flashing or?
No, it just it goes in and out, in and out. Maybe we got another channel problem.
Yeah, it might be the mic behind. You want to okay. Shut it off.
Yeah, we can do that. Well, I'm not going to do it now. so, angels, are they more powerful than we are? Yeah, much more powerful. When the angel told Lot, I can't do anything until you are safe in this other city, what's he implying? One of two things. Either I have the power to do it or I have access to God's power to do it. Can we do stuff like that? So we don't have that kind of power. Power and might. inherent authority and access to power. The word might is used about probably 80 times of mighty works, wonders, and signs, the amazing, powerful things that Jesus did. All right, let's go ahead and jump to page 7. And you can see I'm skipping over a lot of material here. We probably should have spent as much time as we did on the earlier portion. But these angels, they don't bring railing accusations against them. They don't say anything negative against them. Now you could say, well, this is talking about civil authorities. Well, that is definitely true. You could say they're not bringing in a railing accusation against these false teachers who are bringing railing accusations against them. But the reality is, if they don't do it and they're greater than we are, what should we be afraid to do? We should be terrified. We will not speak evil of a ruler of our people, whether it's God or Jesus or angels or archangels, whether it's Satan and his angels, whether it is the governor, the president, the emperor, whatever's in a position of authority, we respect authority. But these people, bottom of page 7 now, like natural brute beasts. Now, I just want to quickly go through that because this is the Greek word zoo. Ever heard the word zoo? What is in a zoo?
All kinds of animals.
So, in the Old Testament, before you look at them all, what kind of animals did they continually destroy? These are animals that, if you see them, you put them to death. What kind of animals is that? And I'm talking about in your city. Even we do this. If there's a mountain lion coming in, eating people's dogs, what do they normally do? Or a bear that kills someone out in the wild, what do they normally do? Ranger told me once, we euthanize them, which is a beautiful way to say we put them to death. Because they don't like talking like that. So, there are wild beasts. Now, on page 8, what are they? First, lions and bears. And so, David told Saul, when a lion or a bear comes and takes a lamb out of the flock, I catch it by the beard and I kill it. When the young lion came roaring up against Samson, what did he do? He tore it apart. One of the Benaniah, one of the mighty men of David, went into a pit and killed a lion on a snowy day. Then we have a bear. Then let's turn to page 9 real quick. I just want to get this covered, and then if we go a little bit late tonight, you can blame me. All right, on page 9 now, at the top, the wolf, the leopard, the young lion, the bear, the cobra's hole, the viper's den. If you see any of those things and you can kill it, would you? Now again, I'm not talking about out in the wild. They have every right to live out in the wild. I don't think we should be out there shooting things. But if they're next to your house and they could kill your kids, what are you going to do? They need to be taken care of. They are. That's the way that it works. So we've got the wolf, we've got the leopard, we've got the poison like a serpent. Then at the bottom of page 9, we have spiritual applications. Jesus told the Pharisees, serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell? And then beware of false prophets who are sheep's clothing but ravenous wolves. And savage wolves, Paul talks about. And when Paul was having that problem in Ephesus, he said, I fought with the beasts in Ephesus. And Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. So these kind of people are made to be caught and destroyed because they speak evil of things they don't understand. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there. Thanks, everybody, for the comments, for the attention. And we'll continue on in 2 Peter next week. Thank you.